to the Global Product Management Talk. Today is Monday, March 4th, and I am live in the studio with Alex Cowan of Leonid Systems and Sarah. Hello, it's great to have you here. BZ is our sound engineer, and he will be screening your calls, so feel free to call in. The number to call in and talk with us is 323-927-2957. Call in and speak with myself. I'm Cindy F. Solomon. I'm the founder, host, and producer of the Global Product Management Talk, which you're listening to. Today we're talking with Alex Cowan, who wrote the book Starting a Tech Business, and we'll be discussing how to disrupt enterprise software and corporate IT using lean principles in six steps. So let me tell you about what you're listening to. The Global Product Management Talk is a broadcast discussion of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about product excellence, business process, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and methodology. It's a featured business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and it's for passionate product professionals and business owners who want to teach, learn, and network about what it takes to produce successful products in an open digital environment inviting live participation. So you can follow us on Twitter at Prod Management Talk, PRODMGMTTALK. Use the hashtag pound PRODMGMTTALK. By the way, that's our website, www.PRODMGMTTALK. And if you are tweeting today, you will be entered into a drawing to win Alex's book, Starting a Tech Business, which is a primer for non-engineers who want to up their game with the latest techniques and foundations and concepts in product development. You can follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Go ahead and follow us and you'll get updates for our upcoming speakers as well as access to our archive of over 75 broadcasts covering all areas of product development, product management, issues related to advancing your career, and as well as startups, innovation, and marketing. Also, join the Startup Product Movement. It's a movement for product excellence through cross-discipline collaboration and holistic product perspective. There's a life cycle that every product, startup, idea, and project passes through to be realized. Focusing on where the product is in its life cycle enables a conversation that brings us all together on what will serve the product most to arrive at product market fit, sustain growth, and generate revenue streams. Follow at Startup Product and bring Startup Product Talks and Summit to your community. Go to www.meetup.com/startupproduct and put up a meetup in your community, and we'll work with you to create that community around product excellence. I want to shout out to our sponsors. Thank you to the AIPMM, who's our platinum sponsor. The AIPMM on the web at AIPMM.com is the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Founded in 1998, promotes worldwide excellence in product management education, providing training, certification credentials, professional networking opportunities, templates, downloads, resources, and excellent education. Check them out. And the AIPMM webinar series, which I've been moderating, is at AIPMM.com under webinar. Subscribe to their newsletter, AIPMM.com/subscribe, and check out the certifications for Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Marketing Manager, Certified Brand Manager, Certified Innovation Leader, and Certified Agile Certified Product Manager. Sprintly, don't ask how it's going, watch how it's going with Sprintly. You can find them on the web at sprint.ly and follow them on Twitter at Sprintly. Thank you to brainmates.com, boosting people and product performance. Follow them at brainmates and find them at brainmates.com. Subscribe to the newsletter, read popular brain rants access resources, including templates, white papers, and how-tos to forward your product management career and methodology. Thank you, Sponsumo.com. Increase revenue and decrease costs for your event. Get set up in minutes to successfully manage more sponsorship speakers and leads at Sponsumo, S-P-O-N-S-U-M-O. Okay, the Global Product Management Talk welcomes people from all disciplines and stages of product evolution, including designers, UX professionals, founders, funders, CEOs, software developers, product marketers, agile marketers, growth hackers, product managers, community managers, customer support and service, content strategists, business analysts, project managers, and you, everyone who loves to talk, think about products, methodologies, and frameworks. Share what you've learned. Again, feel free to call in to join us. And I'm delighted to be in the studio with Alex Cowan. I think we've covered all our sponsors. Wait, thank you, Blame Sally, for the lead-in music. BlameSally.com. They are performing live in San Francisco on May 11th at the Great American Music Hall. I love their music. Check them out at www.BlameSally.com. Okay, stay on, and I will be sharing about upcoming product events. Coming back to Alex. Welcome. So, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, and thank you, Sarah. They've come in from Aptos.
Down south.
Near Santa Cruz?
Near Santa Cruz.
It's beautiful down there. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about Alex. Hold on.
I can't wait to hear about this. I have all these notes.
Well, you correct me if I leave out anything. So right. Alex Cowan is the CTO of Leonid Systems, an enterprise software startup with offices in the Bay Area, Washington, Toronto, and various points abroad. Leonid Systems works with communications and SaaS providers on innovative solutions to leverage and grow their franchise. Alex is also the author of Starting a Tech Business, a primer for non-engineers who want to up their game. You can go to his website at alexandercowan.com, follow him on Twitter at CowanSF, and he is also on linkedin.com/AlexCowan. Today we are talking about, did I cover?
Yeah.
Okay, that was a high-level summary. So, today, we're talking about disrupting enterprise software and corporate IT, and I'm delighted to talk about this because we're not often talking about enterprise, although our listeners, and certainly product management exists more frequently or more obviously as a department in enterprise software in corporate environments. So our lead-in today is, while 17-year-olds were creating hit mobile apps and Facebook was inventing the great new American pastime, corporate IT and enterprise software remained relatively incremental, plodding through release cycles in roughly the same fashion as they had decades prior. But no more. The same trends and tools that have dramatically raised the quality bar in consumer applications are doing the same thing to corporate IT and enterprise software. If you haven't heard about design thinking or lean startup, you probably will soon. And if you've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk, you have heard. We're on a lean theme for the next couple of weeks. The big paradox about these two incredibly powerful ideas is that they're almost universally liked, yet rarely practiced in full, because the hardest part is getting started, but once started, the rest is easy. So Alex is here to help us get started in understanding how to apply these lean principles to a corporate environment and how to do lean thinking in not a startup, but in a mature product environment. And if, again, please follow us at Prod Management Talk, PRODMGMTTALK. One more time, feel free to call in 323-927-2957. Alex, now I turn it over to you. What have I left out, or why don't you give us some context to bring us into this conversation?
Well, I think that the, my area of interest is the gap between all these ideas that everybody likes and actual practice. So everybody likes these ideas. They're very easy to understand. Lean, design thinking, customer development, agile, which, you know, it's been like this for a long time. And yet you go into a typical enterprise software company, and then you go into a multitude of corporate IT environments that are out there consuming this stuff, building their own stuff. And these things are amazingly rare, I think, you know, given everybody's affection for these ideas. So my area of interest is closing that gap between theory and practice.
Well, you know, if we're talking about Agile really came, it's a movement that came out of developers, the engineers, the software developers, standing up and saying, you guys don't know how to manage us. We're going to be autonomous. We're going to be in charge of the product, because we're concerned with product excellence, and you guys don't know how to interface with us. So we're going to apply this Agile methodology, and it's worked really well in small teams, because it's a way of being very pragmatic and doing very quick release cycles and getting the developers all together. So again, they're determining what features, what should be backlogged. Ideally, they have a product owner, they have a product manager who's giving them the correct feedback from the customers and from the market, so they can be iterating at correctly for the product releases. But IT exists in a different place than product development. I'm just thinking of the environment I worked in years ago at FileMaker, and IT was downstairs at one end of the building. The developers were, I guess they were downstairs, but not next to IT. They were in a whole other area. The product managers were upstairs in the other end. So Agile didn't come out of IT. And IT exists, really, I think of it, and correct me if I'm wrong, as a support system and the infrastructure that the whole business sits on. It's not just the product development. So,
right.
So
right.
I think, you know, I always want to provide context to give a bridge for people who are listening, who maybe aren't coming from a corporate environment. Maybe they're coming from a startup, or maybe they're coming from a smaller environment that doesn't have a full-fledged IT.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain how does IT come into this conversation when they are really the infrastructure to support the business functioning? And maybe even go back, give us a real foundation for what is IT, what are they doing, and how are they involved in the product development process?
Well, you've got the very, very workaday stuff in IT, like, hey, I think my computer's broken and things like that. And then you've got items like, well, we're deploying SAP or PeopleSoft or Salesforce.com or something. And then you do have IT departments at a lot of companies that are building the customer portal that their users come and interface to and things like that. So there are those very, very different kind of activities in corporate IT. Nevertheless, I think in each case that the bar is being raised. People expect more, and that's because of just a really, really flourishing movement towards focus on user experience and usability. And you're seeing that in things like Apple's huge, gigantic market share. And every meeting I go into now, places I wouldn't expect, I see those silver laptops, and people have iPhones, and Google kind of, you know, takes a lot of that stuff and builds their own things. They're very usability focused. So I think that, you know, users, stuff that they were consuming years ago and saying, okay, it's fine, it's good enough, either as a direct customer of IT and employee, or, you know, I'm a bank and I have a portal that my customers, banking customers, log into. I think, you know, all those audiences are expecting more. And I think that the audiences that are creating this stuff for them are able to do more, and the tools are out there, the techniques are out there, and that's really what I meant by raising the bar in corporate IT, is how those people can take these ideas and provide something much better to their users, their different constituencies, and the fact that I think that those people are expecting that.
So you're talking about increasing the user experience of interfacing with IT and everything IT is responsible for.
Yeah.
So.
And the efficiency of how they execute that, which is something you have to pair it with.
So tell me, that everything being moved to the cloud, how is this affecting IT as it currently exists?
I think that that particular thing is taking away a lot of the drudgery of things that they had to do before. You know, keeping a server up and running is if you're the person looking at how do we build a system to do this, how do we build process, you know, it's interesting. There's a real technique to it. If you're just having to react to those events all the time, you know, it's not a very interesting job. You know, so I think it allows the people in IT to focus on quality and to focus on their users and applications and what they actually want to do rather than just the basic necessities of keeping the system from falling apart. I think that the you know, the cloud is part and parcel of, you know, you don't have to build every little thing that you want anymore. I mean, there are so many open source tools, commercial tools. I mean, so it's, you're in a situation now where building things, operating things is the basics of it are much easier in a lot of ways. And so that's another thing pushing the bar up. Okay, well, all our basic necessities are a lot easier than they once were in a lot of ways. That's going to make people expect that quality is going to go up. The focus is going to be on tuning the experiences and the applications for the audiences.
Can you speak to the IT professionals and how their jobs may be changing, or what might they have to do to remain relevant? And I am a shout out to the product managers who are listening, who are within the IT department. They were very excited about this conversation.
I think that they're going to be working with their constituents, product owners, or, you know, whoever it is that helps them understand and direct the content of what they're doing to provide more. And I think that the way that they actually go in and do that is going in and learning about the users, and that's where the design thinking stuff comes in. Okay, rather than worrying about things crashing and falling apart, well, let's say they're hosted in the cloud, or geez, you know, things just run better than they used to. Now they're able to go out, learn about users, be more like a product designer, you know, in that regard. And so I think the things that they're going to be doing, and the way that if they want to stay extremely relevant and completely hit it out of the park in their job, I think that the things that they will master are learning how to go out and figure out what users want, and learning that extremely difficult technique of, you know, not just, you know, taking everything at face value and I want it to be blue. Well, why do you want it to be blue? Learning how to ask those kind of questions, of those probing questions of, you say you want this thing to be blue. Why is that? Oh, well, because I have trouble seeing it. Oh, well, you know, maybe there's a way to make it more visible that doesn't involve making it blue. You know, so I think that's what I mean by design thinking, largely. You know, learning the practice of asking those questions, learning what the users are really after, getting that really granular, hands-on empathy for the user, and then applying that to creative solutions where you're really thinking in that perspective, and then going through and, you know, some people in IT build very big things, and they are very much like product developers. So in those cases, I think it's important to, you know, attach assumptions to what they're going to go out and do, and that's sort of the lean startup part of it. Because, you know, it's not their job to be infallible, but it is their job to, anybody who's building something, it's their job to say, this is what I've learned about the user, this is what I'm assuming, this is how I'm going to see if I'm right or not, and then we're going to revisit this. I mean, that's really the lean startup part of this. So I think what, you know, if you trace this back to the Agile stuff, I think really what this, from that perspective, what this amounts to is really improving the quality of the inputs to those cycles. You know, and I think that's what's been missing from the body of practice around IT, enterprise software, and product development, especially in the enterprise, especially enterprise software companies. And I think that's the area where they can really, really dramatically improve the quality of things that they build.
So what you're saying is that for IT, applying customer for development, but the IT customers are internal to the organization.
Usually they are, not always. You know, I work with a lot of people whose job is quote-unquote IT. I met with the SVP of a bank who's in charge of corporate IT. You know, they're really doing basically internal product development. You know, so I think that's increasingly the case where, you know, you're the IT department. Well, now you have, you know, internal users and external users, because so many business, you know, you have, take the insurance business, take almost any business, and what you're seeing is a situation where these businesses are, the industry is consolidating. It's the players that have great online presences, tools for their customers that are growing in a lot of cases and consolidating. So I think that, I mean, how new is online banking? You know, it's not brand new. You know, we've had it for a decade, 15 years, but people are expecting more and more and more of it. You know, stuff that was like, okay, this is amazing. I can log in and see a PDF of my bank statement. Well, that's just not nearly good enough anymore. They want mobile apps. I think you have that in a lot of industries. So I think that, you know, you have IT, which is just, you know, keeping servers running, fixing computers, things like that. And again, I would say that there's room there to practice design thinking, because, you know, when things break, you want to look at why they're breaking. You want to create better systems and processes, not just, you know, react quicker to disasters. But I think that a lot of IT is involved in sort of what amounts to product development. You know, I mean, and I think that not looking at it as product development is a symptom of a lot of the things that have been that could be so much better about enterprise software and corporate IT. You know, that's essentially what we do at Lean, and these are not our numbers, but I, you know, depending on what source you use, 50-70% of enterprise software implementations fail by the metrics that were set out for them. And that's terrible, you know. And it's, you know, usually you'll hear things like, oh, you know, the product was okay. We don't think there's anything inherently wrong with SAP or Salesforce, whoever it was, but, you know, we just didn't quite set it up right, we don't think. And that, I think the symptom of that is not looking at that as a product development thing, you know, not having gone through and practicing that art of gaining empathy for the users, and not on the one hand just doing whatever they tell you, but not on the other hand doing, you know, just whatever you think is right, you know, but sort of going in, learning a lot about them and applying that to directed, creative, informed solutions where you're using your knowledge as an IT professional or product manager paired with IT or enterprise software to create a better solution. So I think, you know, enterprise software is littered with failures, and I think that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't need to be 50-70%. You know, I think they can really raise that number a lot.
It's interesting because that stat, you know, a high percentage of product failures, I see, has been mentioned in terms of innovation attempts as well as product launches.
Right.
So it's amazing how big the failure rate is across the board, not just in startups, and yet we keep going back.
Yeah. Well, but you know, the nice thing about enterprise software and corporate IT, and one of the things I like about it is, it, you know, you have a lot of failures in startups because they're trying brand new things. They have no product market fit. They have no idea who their customer is yet. And you don't sometimes, you know, if you're an enterprise software startup, you have that problem. But if you're the head of software, you know, of IT, internal product development at an enterprise or even a medium-sized business, you don't have that problem. You know, you already have your customers, your product people are going out and applying these ideas to go get you let's say your bank or your insurance company, or you know, you're building a portal for your existing customers. So you've got this, you know, internal and or external customer base already. So it's great, right? You know who these people are. You know where to go find them. They're perfectly happy to talk to you in most cases. So you have all these advantages. And I think the most interesting question about this is, well, then why, you know, how do we bring that number down where, you know, it's like not 50-70% of enterprise software CRM implementations fail? Because I think it can be much lower with these techniques. I really do.
So we are pretty much, our first question was, what's wrong with current enterprise software and corporate IT? So we're pretty much speaking to what's wrong with it. And one of the things that I noticed was that people in the IT department always felt that they were reactive. They were never in front of advising what implementation would be correct for the system. They were always in reaction to the business objectives or the product manager or whoever came to them and said, we're going to do this now, including marketing, and therefore you have to set up the support for us to do this, as opposed to coming to IT and saying, What do you suggest would work, given our objectives, given our roadmap? What technology or what implementation, what software, given that you guys are the experts?
Yeah, well, I think it's all part of a more fundamental problem. You know, and the way I would answer that question, what's wrong with corporate IT, is there's still a sense that it's okay to treat the users as kind of plumbing and cogs, you know, and that's really, you know, so that the design thinking, that idea of really understanding the users and what they do isn't done because, hey, it's enterprise software. These people are drones. They should just sit in their cubicles and do their jobs. And I think that the biggest thing is creating a different language and a different set of shared heuristics to use about who is our user. Why? So we think, you know, when this happens, that should happen. Why do we think that? You know, and it shouldn't be about who already made the decision, who yells loudest, who seems most convinced. It should be about having a discussion in terms of how have we personified this user in the whatever, the finance department, the field service department, what, you know, the just regular desktop stuff department. And what have we learned about them, or what do we need to go and learn about them to do this stuff well? And you know what? Anybody can do that. It doesn't have to be the product manager. It can be the engineer. It can be the manager. It can be the functional leads that are the consumers of this enterprise software. I think that is the biggest single problem. And it, you know, it used to be like, well, that's okay, it's good enough. And now it's not. I think people expect more. They should expect more. And I think that's where the people that are on the cutting edge in this business are have a great opportunity to enhance their profession and enhance their own careers. The other thing I think is important is that these projects are managed in short cycles around Agile, you know, because a lot of the time they have these big long implementation cycles, and that doesn't work very well because of just the compounding of assumptions you have to make to actually be even, you know, mildly right at the end of all that. And I think that, you know, that the idea of Agile, which the Lean Startup stuff very much drew on, and doing things in small batches, and hey, let's not do a big, huge implementation because we can't know that we'll be so right about everything at the end. Let's do this in small batches. Let's hit doubles. Let's make friends. Let's do this progressively. I think that's another huge opportunity to make these things work a lot better.
So now you're actually starting to respond to our Q2, which is, how do you propose disrupting key business infrastructure systems using Lean? But as you mentioned, to implement SAP or Salesforce, those are months and years of preparation, at least they used to be. So applying Lean principles, will that do away with the ability to work with those kinds of software?
Well, I think it is possible to do things in shorter cycles. You know, it depends on the situation. Most enterprise software projects I see, there's an opportunity to take a smaller bite, you know, rather than a bigger bite. There really are. I'll give you a great example. We had contact with a CIO recently who runs a very large enterprise. They've done a lot of acquisitions, which is another big enterprise software headache, you know, amalgamating those things. And, you know, they'd been on this tear, and she said, was a CIO. She said, you know, we have like 12 different CRMs out there, and you know, I'm just letting it ride because I want to go out. I want to see what these people do. I want to see what works. And, you know, they already had all this stuff, so we're going to let it run another year. We're going to see what everybody does. I'm going to go out and look at these things, and that's what my staff is going to do. And then we're going to pick which paradigms we think are working better. And that's you know, really what that's kind of a design thinking thing. You know, that's kind of letting creativity flourish in a lot of different sectors, and then And then going out and observationally seeing what's actually working, which is kind of a Lean thing. Now, I'm not advocating everybody go do that. I mean, these people are in a fairly unique situation, but I think that's an example of, you know, a lot of corporate IT is about, well, you know, let's get everybody on the same system, which is ultimately is the goal. Absolutely, you have to have that. You know, that's important. But, you know, do you really have to do it at once, and how important is that at a given point in time? I think there's an opportunity to do these things in smaller bites, and I think that's where the, you know, Lean stuff comes in. And it's also important to recognize sometimes you can't. And I think in those situations, it's important to just recognize that it's really hard to be right about all this stuff if you're going to do it over a year and a half and you're not going to see results till the end. And to look for opportunities to validate things as you go along, which almost always exist. You know, but you have to, you know, everybody's smart, everybody's capable, a lot of these IT departments have the resources. It's just about prioritizing what's important. And I think that the big win is prioritizing empirical understanding of the users and understanding that it's nobody's job to be infallible, and that if everybody attaches assumptions to what they're doing that they can prove or disprove at the end of a cycle, they're going to be a lot better off. And the shorter those cycles are, the faster they're going to be able to do that and make sure they're on the right track. And the longer those cycles are, the harder that's going to be. You know, sometimes you can't avoid that, but there's a lot of value in just acknowledging it and keeping an eye on it.
Great. So you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host. We're at the halfway point, so if you're just tuning in, you can follow us at www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Follow us on Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK. And you can follow me as well at Cindy F. Solomon. That's S-O-L-O-M-O-N. And we're talking about how to disrupt enterprise software and corporate IT with Alex Cowan, who is the CTO of Leonard Systems and the author of Starting a Tech Business. And you're welcome to call in to talk with us, and a shout out to our listener. We have weekly people who call in. I guess they're listening on their phone. The number is 323-927-2957. By the way, this will be available for on-demand listening. There is a mobile app in the Android Google Play store at PRODMGMTTALK, where you can download all the archives, you can get the Twitter feed, you can see news and updates and the weekly press releases. So, again, thanks quickly to our sponsors, AIPMM, at Sprintly, at Sponsumo, and at Brainmates. If you'd like to sponsor us, get in touch, Cindy at PRODMGMTTALK.com. And if you'd like to be a showcase speaker on the show, get in touch and we will get you on. Okay, so coming back, our Q3 question is, there's so much legacy investment in current enterprise software and corporate IT systems for good reason, as we're speaking to. But so how do you justify deconstructing this foundation?
I would not necessarily deconstruct the foundation. And I think it's important to, you know, the number one thing I hear from people at enterprises, whether I'm talking to executives, product managers, IT people, developers, is, well, you know, we're a big company. I have to get everybody bought into this. It's hard to change the people. We have old infrastructure. We can't change it. You don't have to change it. You don't have to ask for permission. All these things are extremely accessible. Bring some personas to your next meeting. You know, spend an afternoon creating them. And try framing questions about how something should work in those terms. You know, you don't have to switch from whatever legacy infrastructure you have to Salesforce.com to do this stuff. You absolutely do not. All this stuff is very foundational, very fundamental, and nobody needs to ask permission. One individual can start doing this right away. I absolutely promise. I've seen it done. You know, so and I said that the gap between theory and practice is my main area of interest, and the biggest single problem there is just getting started, just taking the first step. Because most people, when they start doing this stuff, they find that it works and they keep doing it. They really do. And there's a lot of business trends and buzzwords and stuff, you know, and I really strongly believe that design thinking and the ideas around Lean Startup, the idea of using the scientific method to actually manage things is they're here to stay. You know, they're fundamental enough and they're sensible enough that they're not going anywhere. And that's just a matter of increasing the body of practice around them.
And it's also necessary from an economic point of view. No one can afford to keep throwing money at things that aren't effective, that aren't working, and that isn't increasing the revenue stream.
Yeah. But that has nothing to do with the decision of, you know, you can use these techniques towards this, but that has nothing to do with, directly at least, with is my infrastructure old or is it new? You know, it really doesn't. It has no direct relationship. You know, you're going to make your old infrastructure work better, you're going to make your new stuff more likely to succeed, or you're going to equip yourself better to bridge the gap between those two things by doing these things. So a good question, though. But, you know, and I'm glad somebody asked, because, again, it's really that taking the first step and can I really do this? Do I have permission? You really don't need permission. You know, you can start using these things in almost any context right away.
So what you're saying is you're reframing what the job at hand is. You're not necessarily changing everything that's being done, but you're changing the approach to it.
You're changing the approach. I don't even know if you are changing the job. You know, maybe you are a little bit, but you're just changing the way it's approached. You really are. It's really all there is to it.
So you suggested starting with personas. So that's something that product professionals, design think, you know, UX people, we know what personas are. But in this context, what do you mean by personas?
Well, you know, a persona is a vivid depiction of your user. And I think that, you know, everybody's heard the term and everybody says, I know what a persona is. Yeah, well, you know, we kind of looked at that. I haven't quite had time to sit down and do it yet, but, you know, it seems like one of those things that maybe, well, go do it. You know, really try it out. Take an afternoon, you know, if you can, take a Sunday and just make a set of personas for all your users. And see if it helps you. I think it probably will. And I think that when you know, or you may say, gee, I've been in this business 20 years. I don't need to make personas on these people like the back of my hand. Well, that's, you know, I'm in that position. But, you know, it's a very dangerous assumption. And every single time I sit down to work on a persona for something at Leonid, for instance, or for one of my customers, I always realize how little I actually know. So I think, what do I mean by persona? I mean, it's a very general technique. It's a vivid, empathic depiction of the user that includes obvious and non-obvious things. And I think that most of them have five components. They have some components, descriptive components. What kind of shoes does this person wear? Where are they? How do I identify this person? And what do they look like? And then the typical kind of checklist and framework for the persona is this think, see, feel, do, or something along those lines. Those four components are good. You know, if you're just looking to get started and you're looking to start structuring something, those are good. And this is super hokey and, you know, this doesn't always go over well, but I always like to put a first name to the personas, like, you know, Itzhak, the IT manager, or, you know, Mary, the marketing manager. It just, because the biggest danger with personas is you make them arbitrary. Like, well, obviously this person does this. Well, obviously this person does that. And you get away from that vivid depiction of who this person really is and what do they really want out of your whatever you're doing for them.
I just want to give a shout out to our tweeter, Sachin Naik, who's in the Bay Area, who's interested in software and hardware automation, and he liked the comment on Salesforce to reduce costs. So thank you, Sachin, for tweeting and for listening. So
does Salesforce reduce costs?
Well, apparently we said something about Salesforce reducing costs, and that's what he was underlining.
Oh, no, I think that. I mean, I did very well, probably does in some cases, but I, if that was what was understood, I misspoke. I mean, I think Salesforce is great. We do development on top of it. It's a great platform. There's a lot of great platforms out there. I think that what reduces costs is reliably making sure that you're building things that are relevant for users and then validating that you really did that. You know, I think, but I mean, those are the two things that most interest me, and I see most consistently adding really, really big material value to the things that people are doing in this environment.
Great. Okay.
And I think that, you know, it's one of the big fallacies of corporate IT that, you know, one tool is going to be so much better than the other. There are differences, absolutely, but, you know, it's really about how you use them. And, you know, if you take a lot of the off-the-shelf stuff, it really does take a lot of this work to make it work. You know, I think another big fallacy about enterprise software is that, oh, if I get something, you know, Salesforce, I think I should switch to another example because I don't want to overemphasize Salesforce. I go get Microsoft Dynamics, and, you know, it was built by Bill Gates. It must be fantastic. Well, I think, you know, it's It's not. You know, most of this stuff is built without a lot of empathy for the users. What it most of these things do have is a very well thought out infrastructure, you know, so that you can move things around and they're very flexible, and that really is kind of their job and what you should expect from them, but you still need these tools to do a good job with these things. Also, I'll tell you another story about a friend of mine who runs a user experience consultancy. She went in to do a major engagement for a big enterprise software company. I absolutely won't say which one. And she said, you know, this is the strangest engagement I've ever had because, you know, these people don't want me here. They love how hard this stuff is to use because, you know, they love to sell armies of consultants into these enterprises to go deploy this stuff, you know. And I think that that is a bit of the I think it's a good example of what's been wrong with enterprise software for the last few decades. And I think that the solution to that is not to harp on it, but I think that the solution is these two things, you know, this use of design thinking and this use of lean, or basically the scientific method, you know, of saying, look, you know, we're not going to pretend that we're infallible. We're going to pretend, what we are going to say is we've learned these things about these users. We're going to attach these assumptions to it. We're going to do things in small batches, and we have these criteria to see if we were really right or not. And then we're going to do it again. And we're just going to, you know, what we shouldn't be held to the standard of making sure we did absolutely everything correctly. But what we should be held to the standard of is that we did things thoughtfully and we did things in a way where we could correct them and can continually improve them as we go along. And I think that's an important point for managers, you know, because, you know, classic IT manager is like, all right, Bob, you know, I'm in, or, you know, Mary, I'm entrusting you this gigantic project. It's, you're going to spend, you know, $5 million, or if it's a small company, $50,000, that's a lot of money. And, you know, don't screw it up. Well, okay, gosh, what do you do now? You're in a huge amount of pressure. You know, a lot of these product managers, project managers in these situations are, they have a lot of unrealistic expectations set on them because, look, you know, 50 to 70% of these things fail. So it's practically like, you know, it's like playing Russian roulette with a double-barreled shotgun, you know? And so I think that they need to manage upwards a little bit and execute these things, you know, a little bit, this design thinking, this use of these lean startup assumptions. And there's some templates on my website. There's templates elsewhere, you know. But the most, you know, you can't, like, go in and say, we need to do design thinking, that's how we're going to be successful. That will not work, you know. You need to go in and show them what you mean, because this stuff's all very empirical. That's the point. You know, so I think that the most important thing is to get started, and I think that you can conquer a lot of the, you know, legacy junkiness in enterprise software, bad processes, bad infrastructure, kind of thoughtless or not very empathic implementations. You can fix them with this stuff. You really can.
Excellent. By the way, Alex's website is at www.alexcowan.com.
Alexander Cowan.
Alexander
Cowan. Alex Cowan is owned by an obscure... one of those blind registrations, and I've begged and I've pleaded because I don't like to be called Alexander. I'm 37 years old, not 70, you know, but it's alexandercowan.com.
Okay, alexandercowan.com.
I love the long form of my name, just that's what I could get.
And there's templates there, and there's a lot of great presentations. Alex is very generous in sharing. So Sachin, I don't know how to pronounce your name, I apologize. So he has a question. He says that corporate IT wants control, and they're afraid to allow change. So usually the champions of change come from outside of IT. What are your comments to that? Thanks, Sachin.
I think that he's absolutely correct, and that's true. Again, my thing is don't try to make big changes, you know, especially if you're a manager level person, you're an implementer, make small changes, you know, just do a little bit of this stuff, show people, don't be like, all right, guys, get ready, I'm bringing some design thinking to this next meeting, you know, brace yourself, bring the kids, you know, just don't make it a big deal, just start doing it in small pieces and hit doubles, make friends. And by the way, be prepared to have it not work a few times, because like anything, it takes practice to make it work. It takes practice to be effective. So my main advice is just start doing it. If you need to do it on a small scale, do it on a small scale. If you need to do it on a big scale, do it in small chunks, because that's it's part of the whole rubric, you know, is don't try to bite off too big a bite, because that's going to be hard to masticate.
So I wonder if he has had the experience of having to go up against corporate IT, of wanting changes from them and getting pushed back.
This story's been told 1,000 times. Maybe he knows what to do. He just has trouble selling it to management. Well, that stinks. But it's the reality of so many of these environments, and the best way to manage through that is just to get a series of small victories using these good techniques. Showing that they work, not making a big stink about it, just show small incremental successes. And guess what? If you learn how to do this stuff and nobody's buying what you're selling, but you can see it working, go find another job, because send your resume to Leonid Systems, because it absolutely does work. And, sometimes as a professional, you if you really are in a situation, where you can't make it work, you go find another place. But I will say that I think there's a lot more situations where management's like, look, our hands are tied. We kind of need, we can't radically change this in quite this way yet, but can we do this in small batches? I mean, as a senior manager, I can also say I've been in that situation, and you can't always turn the ship 180 degrees at a moment's notice. So sometimes that really is the best thing you can do for everybody, is just to start off in small pieces and do it in a stepwise fashion.
So now you have to tell us what Leonid Systems does.
We build enterprise software for communications companies. Companies like, these aren't necessarily our customers, but, Comcast, Verizon, France Telecom, Telefonica, people like that, that have classically had voice and data franchises, and now they're updating those, making them more efficient, adding on new services, selling more cloud services, things like that. And we help them do that.
So we're
in a very niche vertical, but all these things, apply there. And I mean, we're in what used to be called telecom and still is in a lot of quarters. And it's a very conservative industry. We help customers work through lots of old legacy implementations. And this really is how we do it.
Excellent. Because you suggested that if people are in a bad IT situation, that they should be putting their resume out there.
Yeah, but I what I also tried to suggest, and I hope I was effective in this, is to try and use a little design thinking with your senior management. Try to understand why they're saying these things, because I think there's a lot more people that get frustrated because they think that nobody's listening to them and they can't do what they want. And really, what's happening is they're not, haven't completely understood the full, perspective of what's going on at their company. So I wouldn't blithely go look for another job. I would try to do these things in small pieces. I would see how it works out. I would work to understand, why use this design thinking with your senior management. Why don't they want to do these changes? If you fundamentally disagree with those reasons, then you're at a company that you don't believe in, and then that's a situation where maybe you should do those things. But I wouldn't go blindly apply for another job just because your company doesn't currently do design thinking. I think the big opportunity is to be the person that gradually, on a success basis, introduces that technique to their company. I think that's going to be a lot more successful, a lot happier, and a lot more gratified professionally, personally, and financially if that's what you do.
Sure. So there's some soft skills necessary at play. I always suggest that people start by taking those people in that department out to lunch and listening to them, letting them vent, understanding from their perspective what they're up against. Everyone wants product excellence. Nobody wants their product or their environment or their organization to fail or to have conflict. It's a matter of we all want to implement the best methodology, but these things are complex, and they exist. The current situation exists for a reason. It got there for a reason, and it takes people working together and collaborating to change it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, welcome to Gordon Kragovic, who suggests that for describing personas, do you recommend using some kind of formal structured descriptions? So is this a leading question, Gordon? Let's see if he's a UX person, and I can't tell.
In some ways it's a soft skill. There is some structure. I mean, I think most personas, I recommend using these five parts. You have your identifying characteristics, which may vary by circumstance. What kind of shoes do they wear, or what department do they work in? What do they do? And then you have this think, see, feel, do components to the persona. What does this person think? What do they see? I mean, what's in front of them? what do they feel? Because, you know, that comes into play a lot. People, you know, think one thing, but actually they feel differently, and often they act on their feelings. And then what do they actually do? What are the things that they do in different situations? And I think, you know, and then what do you do with these personas? Well, I think, you know, you create them. The next thing is particularly if you're doing something new, is you formulate problem scenarios. What is, you know, what actual problems are these people running into? And I think that's a really good jumping off point to create the more detailed artifacts that you would develop systems and products around: user stories, use cases, those more kind of classical, clinical, prescriptive inputs to something like the agile development process or just development in general. And then, again, there's some templates on alexandercowan.com. I don't want to oversell those. It's just that, you know, I do, if you go to the front page, there's a link to a product development template. There's a Google Doc that has examples, because I get these questions a lot. And then, you know, there's things online that say, okay, we'll use Think, See, Feel, Do. Well, I think, you know, it's important to show examples.
Sure. And then personas are necessary when you start building user stories. But that's a whole other conversation, yeah, about how are you defining the user within that story.
Yeah. Make them vivid and make sure you can actually visualize this person and identify them. That's the number one thing I see go wrong when I'm coaching people on initially building personas. You know, they become arbitrary. You can't really connect them to the thoughts and the emotions and the actions of a real individual. So take photos if you want. Photos help a lot. Using the first name thing, you know, Amy, the applications engineer, that helps a lot. You know, sometimes it's just little silly details like that really help with the quality of these things.
I saw one company, the product managers would actually build blog postings for each of the personas, because that made it more real for the developers and made it easier to assign a conversation to that persona.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, anything that you can put out there that's like, well, I think this person would look like, feel like, act like, do this, that stuff is all going to help you have something that, you know, you can, doesn't mean you're going to make necessarily be more correct, but, you know, the whole point of being a persona, of writing a persona, is to be more vivid and more descriptive and to have something that you can test and revise. So that's why being vivid and being as descriptive as possible is so important. And another thing I would say is, you know, maybe, especially if you're doing this yourself initially, make sure that you can hand these personas to somebody else and they can understand them. Because a lot of what this is about is taking your understanding of the individual and making it something that everybody else can share and understand as well. You know, and that's another reason why I see people not build personas and then benefit from them after the fact. Is, oh, geez, you know, we always think people know more about what we know and what we think than they actually do. And so personas, is one of their biggest roles is just to be able to share and this context, this descriptive context of the user.
I like that personas help you keep the assumptions in check and actually help you test the reality. So I have to tweet that. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, you always, you know, you're going to flow through these things, these personas, to these, you know, these assumptions about what you're going to do, to your executions, to making sure that you've attached to those things measurable things, qualitative or quantitative, that you can loop back and say, you know, we were right about this persona, or, you know, this particular facet of a persona, or we were not.
So I have a question about the how product teams should be composed. If there's a, you know, who, from your perspective, who should be on the product team that could effectively implement lean principles in a corporate IT environment?
Somebody who does this stuff, you know, I try to stay away from questions and formulations of, well, who should be consulted when and what kind of meetings should you have? Because I think, you know, it varies so much by circumstance, and it's so difficult for a lot of individuals to control. I mean, the best thing you can do for a product team internal, you know, whether that's an internal IT execution or an IT execution enterprise software implementation that's going to have external customers and users, is to have somebody that can do these things. Just having somebody, let's say you're building something for the your Midas, and you're building an application for the folks that are working on the cars. Well, just having someone in there that works on cars will not solve your problem. You know, and I think that's a big fallacy of this kind of IT. You know, because that person, it's better than not doing it for sure. But what you really want is somebody that's able to talk to that person, learn about them, interpret what they're saying and why they're saying it, and then understands enough of the context to be able to translate that into things that you should do with the product. Because that person isn't a product design person. That person is not, you know, an IT or enterprise software person, probably. So, you know, they're going to say, you put them on the spot, they're going to be like, sure, I guess I'd like a green button there, you know, but that may totally fall on its face. And you'd be like, well, we asked the user, you know, and they said we should have a green button there. I guess we shouldn't do design thinking. Well, no, that's not what design thinking is, you know.
So you're really talking about someone who's what I would call a product manager in the for the IT execution or the IT product. Someone who has the skills to know how to go out and ask the right questions to the customer or get the right data that is quality data to build those personas to then communicate to the IT department or to the external stakeholders about what the best way to go is.
Yeah. They need to be able to go out, ask relevant questions, care, learn about these people, formulate that into something everybody else can understand as well. And then this is the hardest part, learn about them, interpret what they've learned into implementations. You know, and that, you know, that translation between the acquisition of that empathy and the kind of directed creativity it takes to take that and translate that into a solution is one of the hardest and most valuable parts of this whole area of practice. And it takes a lot of iterations. You know, you get a little better at it each time.
So we're coming down to the end of our hour. We really have spoken to a lot of the questions and gotten a great understanding of how to apply these principles to corporate IT and enterprise software. Thank you to our tweeters. And Sachin actually went to alexandercowan.com/startingatechbusiness, and he's looking at your book. And Sachin, that wins you the book. So that you are a winner. You made the drawing very easily. So I'll tweet out to you, Sachin, so you can send us your physical address. It is an actual physical book. It's not a download. Starting a Tech Business. It's available at Barnes & Noble's. It's published by Wiley. And it's all about the business person's guide to best practice product development, practical skills to create better products and deliverables, drive steady, definitive improvement using lean, master modern strategy management, using the business model canvas. So you've done an overview of all of these trendy subject matter that we're discussing on the Global Product Management Talk Weekly.
Overview is fair. I mean, I think it's really the, you know, how do you actually do these things and what are the linkages between them? Why do they matter to each other? That's really my area of interest. You know, because a lot of great overviews out there, the actual linkage of these things and examples and tips and, you know, getting kind of theory to marry practice, that's really what I think is interesting, to me personally at least. And that's what the book's about.
That's great. That's great. So thank you so much, Alex Cowan, for coming into the studio. We're at Studio 132 in the beautiful Oakland Hills with our engineer, BZ Lewis, a six-time Emmy winner. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us in the studio. This was great. You've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk with Alex Cowan. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host, and I want to do a shout out again to thank our sponsors at AIPMM. Join me on the AIPMM webinar series this Friday. Go to www.aipmm.com to check out their offerings and certifications and trainings. Thank you to Sponsumo at Sponsumo. Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going. Watch how it's going with Sprintly. You can find them on the web at sprint.ly. Thank you, BrainMates. BrainMates.com. Read their popular brain rants and access resources. And coming up in the San Francisco Bay Area is the Silicon Valley Product Camp in San Jose on March 23rd. Follow at Product Camp SV. Also, a great training on March 30th in Sunnyvale, pricing for entrepreneurs and product managers. You can get $250 off registration. Go to markstiving.com, check out the pricing course, and use Startup Prod to get your $250 off an all-day intensive on pricing principles. Thank you to Blame Sally, www.blamesally.com, for the music, which you'll hear in a minute. They're performing at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. And join us monthly in San Francisco for SF Product Talks. Coming up, we're talking about competitive insights with Sean Campbell. And also coming up on San Francisco Product Talks moves to San Mateo. At Marketo on the third week in March. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out all the details and the locations. And thanks for joining us. The tweets will be available following this at Prod Management Talk, and the transcript will be available on blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. Thank you. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
Great. And look forward. Oh, by the way, Alex, we're doing the webinar together this Friday.
Yes. Yes, we are. I'm looking forward to that.
I am, too. So everything we've been talking about today will actually, you'll be giving us a full presentation complete with visuals to walk us through. And there'll also be a Q&A session there, another opportunity to win your book. But you actually go deep into the things that we've touched upon here. This has been a relaxed conversation about these important things, but the Friday webinar is a lot more formal and specific, and those slides will be available following. Go to AIPMM.com under webinars and register right now for that webcast, and we'll see you Friday morning and again next week here on the Global Product Management Talk. We're talking more about lean and lean in startups with Dan Olson, who talks about how to be a product manager ninja. So have a great week. Thank you.